gotta be real. Don't give me
that. You're listening to us.
America and Canada.
Play.
Oh my God.
Play. Play. Kids love it. Brains need it. But people don't always understand it. Here to help explain it, your hosts, Keisha and Heather. They're knee deep in play.
Do you hear that sound?
I do hear that sound, yes.
That's the sound of the helicopter teachers. They have the loudest voice in the room.
I was going to ask you if you have any at your center, but you know what? I'm not going to ask you that because that's wrong.
Thank you. You're always correcting. You're always jumping in. I want to talk about the helicopter teacher, the effect it has on the classroom and the children. And then I want to talk about how to park the helicopter and step out of it and still feel valuable. Because all jokes aside, I think that teachers that do that are well-meaning. They're not doing it because they want to deter any learning. I think they're doing it because they think that that's what their job entails.
Well, we oftentimes, you know, our personalities and the way we engage with others in the world is how we experienced life. We were growing up, or how something has taken place in our life that has led us to be that way.
It's either the way that you grew up, you know, what was done to you, you either do it or you do the polar opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were helicopters, maybe you become a helicopter, or you stay away from that and you're total opposite of what that is. So you're right.
Yeah.
Your past or your upbringing has a lot to do with the style of teacher that you become. Until you start to figure out other tools and other options and what's best. And if you are a teacher who's interested in offering what's best, then I think you figure out a way to unload those tools and fill up with some better ones.
I mean, so I think you and I both agree that they are not doing it to be obstacles to children's learning or to children experiencing life and having wonderful moments. But because I'm not a hovering kind of person, what do you think is going through their head as they're hovering?
Doing my job.
Is it about keeping children bubble wrapped and safe, or is it about...
I think it's different for different people. I think for some people it is about the feeling that their job is to keep everyone physically safe. So they're going to do whatever it is to keep everyone safe. So they're over here, okay, I'm holding Bobby's hand, or let me help you do this. So kind of over-helping. And then there are other people who are helicoptering because they want to be in charge. So that's a different thing. And then there are other people who are helicoptering because they want to be helpful, because they're a mothering type, because they think that it is good for the child. The child needs it. But in fact, it's actually stifling their independence. It's actually making them question themselves, making them second-guess things, making them ask the teacher 100 times, is this right? Is this right? Is this okay? An example, I got a new student, and she came from a Montessori school. And it took me some obscene amount of months to convince her that she could paint on her paper any way she wanted to. And it was a lot of, did I put it here? Did I put this in there? And it wasn't because she didn't have the experiences. It's because her experiences were always controlled. Her experiences with the materials were always controlled. So when we do that, we get children who are incapable of freely exploring, incapable of following their own thought and their own lead, because they're looking for the adult to give them that lead and that thought.
Well, they're going to doubt themselves, exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lot of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. A lot of self-doubt. And that's definitely not what we want. That's not what we want for these children. We want them to be independent, have ideas, and feel strongly that their ideas are going to count and that they don't need any praise or good job, physical support all the time with things that they're capable of doing. I think some tools that you can use and that I've used in the past with educators that I've worked with is, and I need to do this for myself sometimes, just in general as the director of the program, because it's not just helicopter teachers. It can be helicopter directors, too. We can get into that. But I want to, like you said, we're always growing and we're always reflecting. And I know each and every single day, I reflect on my day, what I did, how I handled every situation, what I can do better. Do I fix it? Is it an immediate fix? Not always. Sometimes it's something concrete I spot and say, okay, that's not right. I'm not doing that ever again. Other times, it's something that I have to work on within myself. So one way that you can start to figure out, am I a hoverer and how much of a hoverer am I, is recording yourself, recording your voice, just hitting a recorder and going about your day as normal and then listening back later. And if you hear your voice louder and more often than the children, then you might be a little helicopter.
Yes, it's recording your voice, and it's also, well, I mean, even more ideal if you were going to go that route and be that reflective and be that open to checking this out, which we encourage that for all of us, would be video record, because it's not just your voice, it's also your proximity.
Good point, Heather.
Your proximity to the children, because, I mean, sometimes you're actually in their space.
Depending on the bubble, I call it popping up bubble.
Yeah, because whether they're infants or toddlers, or you know, you have to. It seems like in every episode, we of course touch upon having real, authentic relationships with both the children and the parents. And so, if you know the children and you know what they're capable of, because you have that relationship and you've really forged it with the children. You've seen how they move. You've seen how they move their body through space. You know if they're going to, if they're on a swing, if they're, you know, you can sort of anticipate if they're going to try to jump off the swing or whatever they're going to do. So you should therefore then know where to place yourself so that you can put your hands out to guide them should they need it. You know, it's not about grabbing them. It's about, it's, you know what? It's like we talked about before. I've said in another episode, our work is hard work. If you are really good and you are responsive to the kids, you're there and you're not holding their hand every second. You're there and you somehow develop this ability to know just how far away you need to be. And another teacher, maybe you've got a student teacher, and they're just doing their practicum, and they've noticed that, you know, this child's about to do this activity. I don't know, maybe they're going to have a big jump somewhere, I know one thing, our children love to fire the balls on the playground up onto the roof of the center, and then they come back down. Now, 99 times out of 100, they do come back down, and they love doing it. And they also, there's some long plastic shovels that they like to put the ball on one end, and then they like to jump on the other end of the shovel. And, you know, obviously this is giving the children freedom to do things that they're interested in. But with some children, you might be a little bit closer. And maybe the children are the same age. So this child, you're positioning yourself further away. This child, you're positioning yourself a little bit closer. And a student teacher might say to you, what's up with that? Well, what's up with that is you know those children.
You know the children.
You know that
exactly.
This child needs a little bit more support. He hasn't maybe developed the skill to the same degree as the other child. Or perhaps they're both exceptional at it, but you know that when Randy does it, he tends to direct it towards the other children as opposed to the roof. So you're there because you're going to intercede in case somebody's about to get a ball in their
face.
Yeah,
and like you said, it goes back to relationships, and I feel like every episode, and this is a key thing to notice, no matter what we're talking about, as it pertains to children and their families and our programs, the center of that is relationship. So knowing the children and allowing ourselves to step back a little bit and observing and getting to know the children will tell us when we need to be closer or further, like you just said. I think some helicopter teachers feel that it's their job to fix all the problems, avoid the conflict. They feel like they're failing if there are crying children, fighting children, or children who have typical bumps and scrapes and bruises. So we need to fix that and give them the information that tells them that if you're doing your job right, then there is going to be crying, and there is going to be conflict, and there is going to be bumps and scrapes. So those things happening don't define you as a teacher. I think that's what many helicopter teachers are busy trying to avoid.
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed your helicopter noise at the beginning of the podcast. We have some substitute teachers who are very much helicopter people. Because, you know, sometimes substitutes, as they go from center to center to center, I don't know if you call them supply teachers or substitute teachers. But
I just call them subs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they sometimes, more subs are helicoptery than your team. Because hopefully if you're not having a lot of staff turnover, your team really has gotten good and knows where to position themselves and knows how often to speak out. I mean, I did love your point about recording the voice, because sometimes they're just helicoptery from a vocal perspective, because maybe they're really good at positioning themselves.
I really love your point about the video, because sometimes it's that body language and you're right, the proximity that they are to the children. I noticed, because I'm working across the street on the other school, I can see into our playground. It was something cool I noticed the other day, that the teachers aren't so worried about what the children are doing. They're not hovering over them every second. I mean, we have a pretty long playground, and there can be a group of kids all the way at the end of the playground. And because we know those children, they know the equipment, they know the playground, and nobody's worried about anything happening that shouldn't happen, the teachers don't feel like they have to hover over there. They don't feel like they have to be down their back. Of course, they're observing, but they can observe from afar. I'm not finding that it needs to be like typical elementary schools, which is interesting because those children are older. Typical elementary schools on the playground where the teachers are like on the children like white on rice, and they can't have those moments with their friends where they feel like they're alone and on an adventure and, you know, figuring out things on their own. We're taking away the opportunity for children to have that experience. And if I think back to my childhood, I don't remember adults hovering over me ever when I'm outside. I just can't. I try hard to picture adults in my play environment with me and my friends outside, and they're just not there. We're at the creek. We're in the woods. We're climbing climbers and doing all kinds of things, but there's not an adult hovering over us. So I think that
Sometimes, depending upon if you get a new piece of equipment or some new materials, sometimes you have to be adept at switching. Like sometimes, I'm just thinking when we first got our hive. Not only all of the children were swarming the hive, but the staff were really, because as a team, they are so good now at stepping back and standing back that you could see it. As I was observing, you could really see the teachers, they were stepping in and stepping back, and they almost, you know, they didn't look, I'm just saying it because we're adults, and I'm sure adults are listening to us. My team didn't look stunned when I say that they looked confused, because they wanted to be close, because the children were not familiar with how to climb on this. But they also wanted to be back a bit because they wanted to demonstrate to the children, we have faith in your abilities. And of course, for myself, I was wanting them to be hovering. I really did want them to be hovering
at that moment,
because it. Do you guys don't have a hive yet on your, at your program?
No,
or?
We don't have a hive. We have a haystack, which is basically a high tunnel. Jeff saw it. It's a high tunnel, and when we first got it, we felt the same way. We felt the same exact way, because it goes back to relationships again, because it's not just about our relationship with the child. It's about the child's relationship with the space and with the other children and with the teachers. And if there's something new in the environment, that's an untapped, you know, untapped relationship. They don't know that equipment yet. So that's being a good teacher. That's when you know you need to position yourself. And like you said, it is hard work, because you have to position yourself in a way that the children do feel comfortable exploring this material and can trust themselves, but that we're there if that support is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And by support, I don't mean lifting them onto the equipment. I mean, if Susie comes flying off and it's, you know, she can be caught. I don't mean, you know, doing the work for the children, because I believe that they should go as high as they can go and then get down,
yeah.
And then as they develop, then they go higher.
Have you ever seen a teacher who, like, they take the child's foot and they, like, move the foot to this place and move the hand to this place? Like, they're almost, like, hand over hand trying to teach the child to climb.
That's hovering.
For me, that's going beyond helicoptering. Mm-hmm. That's like your training wheels kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, that child, if that child doesn't have those abilities, then that child shouldn't be on that piece of equipment. If you have to do that, I mean, obviously the child wouldn't be going up, because the child doesn't even know to put the hand there and the foot there. And
well, that's part of what is being avoided by helicopter teachers, the struggle. They want to avoid the struggle. And like I said, many teachers that do this believe that what they're doing is right for children. They're not doing it because they're trying to hurt anybody. They're doing it because they believe that that's their job. So they want to avoid the struggle. They want to swoop in and help the child. They want to, if a child is crying, they want to swoop in and fix it. But we have to realize the importance of allowing a child to have those emotions, allowing a child to have that struggle, allowing a child to figure out where his foot goes next. That's the learning.
Sometimes, as we talked about before, to experience failure.
Exactly.
You know, as long
yep.
as the child is not experiencing failure in an epic manner where they get severely hurt, they have to. That's one thing that both helicopter parents and helicopter teachers have in common, in that they almost want to, you know, they want the child to grow and develop, but they want to be that safety net that's really, really close. Mm-hmm. And so then it's the same thing, the other pruning thing, right? The child's really not going to have that experience to be able to refine and develop and hone their abilities, because they're not really getting the experience in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This person is hovering and helping them to such a degree that they're not really going to know what they just achieved. It's frustrating, because you do know that they have the best of intentions. You do.
And the flip side of that is, we're not asking you to, because we say step back a lot, we're not asking you to remove yourself from the environment. We're not asking you to not be a support to a child when they need it, socially, emotionally, physically. We're not asking you to not be a relevant member of the society in the classroom. But what we're asking you is to know the children and understand when what you're offering is needed. And also get down on their level and enter their world sometimes. So I think well-meaning teachers can make slight changes in the way that they do things. I mean, tongues will be bitten and hands will be tied, But I think helicopter teachers can change because 99% of them are attempting to be, well, positive role models and teachers in the lives of children. So if they identify these behaviors that they're doing naturally or purposefully and start to work on not doing them, I think it's hard, but when you see the benefits, it's worth it.
You know what would be cool, Keisha, if we knew, like, someone who wrote books, like, for early childhood educators, and they could write a book for helicopter teachers. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head who would write a cool book like that. You know, like somebody who maybe wrote about burnout and about other cool things like that. I bet you they could write a really cool book about it because, you know, we're just two people, but...
Write your own damn book.
What? Like I want to take on that project. I don't think so.
Oh, my goodness. So today we're talking about helicopter teachers. And before we go, I want to talk about, we talked a little bit about recording yourself, reflecting at the end of each day. What else can we give them as a piece of a tool to go away with? What else can they do to work on this if they feel doing too much in the classroom, aside from biting their tongue and tying their hands behind their backs? Can you think of anything else, Heather?
Well, I know that there's some cool scales, assessment, self-assessment tools where you can, I'm thinking, I know there's the caregiver interaction scale, and there's a couple other tools where you can really do some self-reflection upon how you approach your work with children and supervise the children. Another new
one is... I think that's a Canada thing. Can you put a link to that on underneath the link to this tape? Because we don't have anything like that here.
Okay.
What we have is probably going to not support what we're talking about here.
Because the other one would be some centers, not all centers, but some centers, obviously most centers, I'm sure, have once a year the director meets with the staff to do evaluations or maybe twice a year or whatever it is to talk about goals and objectives that the staff should work on with their work with children. But some centers, very forward-thinking centers that I know of, have peer evaluation. So that's where your colleagues who you work with actually fill out forms on your abilities as well. And, you know, a lot of people are very fearful of that because, you know, oh, I work with this person. But if you've got a good team, then you're very open to it. So it can be self-reflection. It can be team reflection. I mean, as well as, you know, because sometimes when the administrator says to you, I see that this is how you're doing this, I'd like, you know, maybe you could approach it differently. If the person has any, you know, experiential challenges where with authority figures or something like that, they might not hear it as the same way they would hear it from a team member they get along well with.
I think that's a great idea. It's not something that I think I have ever heard of. I have heard of programs where the staff evaluates the director and the director evaluates the staff, but I have not heard of peer evaluation in early childhood education. But I think that's a great idea.
I have some cool links for all of that stuff, yeah.
Wonderful.
I'll have to definitely put those links up.
Okay, well, we'll send you guys away with those tools, and hopefully the helicopters will all land. Let's see in there.
Yes, that's. I guess we'll just picture us those like fluorescent things because we're like on the runway, flagging people.
Come on, land those helicopters. Well, bye guys, and park your helicopter to the left.
And thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
This has been Knee Deep in Play. Join us next week for another episode. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Are you itching to connect with Heather or Keisha? You can find them at the Child Care and Bar and Grill Facebook page or at playvolution.com. That's PLAY-VOLUTION.com in the forum section under podcasts. Drop them a note. They're hoping to hear from you.